Thank you for joining us for Life and Taxes with tax attorney Andrew Foster of Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law. Call in now with your tax questions at 800-818-2255 or locally at 247-7282 or 353-4674.
And Andrew's in the studio with us. Hi, Andrew. How are you?
Good morning, Ben. Doing well.
Okay, what are we talking about today?
Well, Ben, we're going to go down the road of transfer taxes today and just talk in general about these estate and gift tax issues and talk about, you know, the environment we're in right now, which is very favorable to transfer assets to either the next generation, friends, extended family members.
Your favorite radio announcer.
Your favorite radio announcer. Your favorite attorney.
He met me.
Yeah, that's right. I met her.
No, but you know, certainly it is a good environment for transferring assets at this point in time during life or at death, and especially, you know, at death. And we'll get into the rules. So let's talk about where we stand right now with regards to the gift tax rules.
Okay. Right.
So
for a long time, I think it was set at like 12.
As it stands right now, you know, the code says $10,000 for an annual exclusion. Mm-hmm. It's indexed for inflation. We're now at $15,000. Mm-hmm. So what that means, Ben, is that you can give anyone $15,000 a year.
Anyone. I said anyone.
And not have to file a gift tax return for that gift. And so a lot of times, you know, we see this a classic scenario where a grandparent, for instance, is giving grandchildren, you know, maybe some money to put away for college or, or other things. And you know, they're very cognizant of this amount, this annual exclusion amount, and make sure that they give that each and every year as a way to transfer wealth down to the generations. So a useful tool, and you know, the good news is no requirement to report. You know, we do mention if it's spouses making the gift, you know, you can have a spouse write one check for, let's say, $30,000. The issue there is that if you want to split that gift up, make it 15 and 15, you got to file a gift tax return. The easier way to do that would be write two checks, right? And that way you're not forced to file that gift tax return and check the gift splitting box.
Here we have a lot of parents and grandparents sending off their kids and grandkids to college this time of year. And so some of them may live off campus and they're going to pay their rent for the year. Is that kind of as a gift?
Exactly. Gift? Yeah, that'd be a gift. You know, we have grandparents sometimes write the check directly to the to the college or university for tuition purposes. Again, that's going to be a gift to the student who receives that. So yeah, just be cognizant of the fact the $15,000 limit's there. But the fact is, Ben, if you go over the $15,000 and it's forced, you're forced to file a gift tax return, it's frankly not that big of a deal, because there's not going to be any tax due and payable because there's an $11.2 million lifetime exemption amount.
Okay.
So,
right.
You know, we've got an annual exclusion of $15,000 can give anybody $15,000 a year without having to file a return. In the event a return's filed, you can dip into that lifetime exemption and shield the gift from any tax that's being paid. So this is a useful tool, especially now because $11.2 million. A lot of room there to give.
Yeah, I don't think I'm reaching that.
So, you know, certainly, you know, it's as I said, it's a favorable environment for transferring assets. Now, what's the downside, to gifting? And the short answer is if you give cash, really not much of a downside because the person gets the money and they can do what they want to with it. But let's just say you give, an appreciated asset, an asset that you bought for, a lesser amount of money and now you're giving it to someone. So, you know, a classic example is you bought a stock for a dollar and now you're giving that stock to Ben and Ben then turns around and sells that stock and it's worth $100. Well, what's just happened there? Well, when you give that stock that you bought for a dollar to Ben, he takes your basis in that. We call it carryover basis. So he takes a $1 basis in that stock. Then he turns around and sells the stock for $100 and he has to pay taxes on $99.
Right.
We call it a built-in gain basically.
Right.
So that's the downside to gifting is we have carryover basis. The other thing I'll warn our listeners about is that it doesn't carry over for losses. So let's say the flip side is true,
yeah,
where I bought a stock for $100. It's now worth $1, mm-hmm, and I'm giving that to Ben, and I say, Ben, here, take the stock, and then Ben goes and sells it.
I can't take the loss.
We've just lost $99. Yeah. We just lost the loss. Mm-hmm. The loss went poof. Mm-hmm. It's gone. And so, therefore, you know, the better way to structure that deal would be for me to sell the stock,
mm-hmm,
take the $99 loss, which I can then use on my tax return, and mm-hmm, then give the cash to Ben.
Yeah.
So, because he's going to end up with $1 either way.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
So it doesn't really matter. But if we do it one way, we lose the loss. If we do it another way, we keep the loss and allow it to be used, at mm-hmm, least on the
offset taxes.
Yeah, you know, on the person that gives the gift transaction.
Now, one of the places this comes up a lot, though, is somebody wanting to deed property and during their lifetime, yeah, instead of wait for it to be passing an inheritance.
Exactly. And that can be dangerous, Ben. You know, we get a lot of older clients who come in and are really, really nervous about making sure their property is fully protected. And their knee jerk reaction is, well, let me just go ahead and give it to my kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we have to explain to them, well, number one, you know, we've just gone through some of the basis rules. What'd you pay for that property?
Mm-hmm.
You know, did you get this at a good time? I mean,
right,
is it highly
right,
appreciated? Because if that's the case, then you're giving, you know, a tax issue to your, you know, the mm-hmm, next generation. The next thing that we talk about is that once you give that property away, it's no longer yours.
Right.
You sign that deed, it becomes the mm-hmm, the children's property, mm-hmm, and it's subject to their twists and turns of their life.
Right.
Divorce, mm-hmm, accidents, tax issues,
mm-hmm,
you know, anything can make that property susceptible. And if you're the one who's living on that property, I mean, imagine you get, you know, a notice saying that
you got to move.
Yeah, you got to move because, you know, one of your children had an unfortunate incident.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a good position.
Bankruptcy
to be in.
And they, yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, another way to structure it potentially, Ben, is to say, okay, well, let's maybe I'll take a life estate in the property, meaning mm-hmm, I'll have lifetime rights and I'll go ahead and give the remainder interest to children. And that's better
because mm-hmm,
you at least maintain control of the property.
Mm-hmm.
One issue I'll tell you is that you can't use the annual exclusion for that type of transaction because it's not a present interest gift.
Mm-hmm.
It's a future interest because you give it a remainder interest. So the $15,000 exclusion is off the table. So you would be filing a gift tax return, in this regard. And, you know, it's not foolproof. There are some
right,
issues that can come with it, but as far as structuring it and getting a step up in tax basis at death, which we're going to get into here in just a second,
mm-hmm,
the life estate is a better move than just a straight gift to your children.
All right. We have Bob in Moorhead City with a question. Hi, Bob.
Question on the maximum of an estate. I don't have any problem with this, but I have a curiosity about, does the $11 million include everything that person owns, cars, land, stocks, bank accounts, anything of value?
That's right, Bob. Yeah, anything of value. So anything that you have your hands on. And we mentioned this when we talk about an estate tax, is that some people think of it as a probate estate, meaning that anything that passes pursuant to the terms of your will is included. But it's not really that. It's the whole kit and caboodle. It's everything. So life insurance, that sometimes people think, well, that's not part of your estate because it passes by beneficiary designation, or IRAs that have beneficiary designations. That's not really part of my probate estate. All of that stuff, that wide umbrella, is going to be includable for your taxable estate. And the good news is that you got $11 million mm-hmm, to play with. And like you said, probably won't get that high, but you know, what
about,
I'll say is
a prior year gifting or
about gifts that she gave away 8 or 9 years ago. Do they still add into her estate?
Yeah, good question there, Bob. So yeah, if a gift was made in prior years and a gift tax return was filed, then you're going to eat away at whatever the exemption amount was at that particular time when the gift was made, and it becomes kind of a proration there. So let's say that, you know, whatever the percentages are, we've got $11 million now, but she gave past gifts and used 50% of her exclusion amount back when she gave the gift, then she'd only have $5.5 million. It's tricky on the
exclusion
math, but basically, like, you have that exemption amount, and if you eat away at it, pro rata is what you're going to be left with at the end of the day when the estate is settled.
About joint accounts with another person with pay on death or
yeah,
right of survivorship.
Yep, that's going to be a part of your estate.
Half of it or all of it?
Half of it.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. However, you know, if that other person, if your intention was for that to be split among a number of people, that other person has complete control.
Yeah, and Bob, what I'll say is that it depends on how that's structured. I mean, a joint rider survivorship account, half of it, but, you know, a payable on death designee, all of it would be included in the person's estate, and then it would go out based upon the beneficiary designations.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Well, I just thought it's an interesting question.
Yeah, there you go. Good questions, Bob.
Thanks a lot.
All
Thanks,
right.
Bob.
But again, that amount, is that for a single individual, or is that husband and wife estate, or?
Yeah, so 11.2 on a single individual at the moment.
Okay.
So $22.4 million, you know. And what I was going to get to with Bob there is that one issue as far as planning goes is we're at these levels right now, but this all sunsets in 2026.
Yeah.
So, you know, all it takes is maybe someone else in the White House or letting the provision just sunset, and we're back to the $5 million exemption amount.
And, well, we saw that when we call it Steinbrenner.
Yeah.
When George Steinbrenner died, it was in the year when after a sunset, and there was a 1 year where there was no exemption.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So it was a time when he died with a multi-million-dollar estate and no taxes.
Yeah, we had 1 year of no estate tax,
mm-hmm.
And then obviously it went back and reverted to the $3.5 million. Then went to $5 million. Now it's, you know, $10 million. But the issue, Ben, is that you plan for flexibility, because we never know what the future is going to hold.
So if you have an estate that size and you need to make that planning on it after you make that gift to your favorite announcers, then you can call on the folks at Harvell and Collins and make those plans at harvellandcollins.com. And you can email Andrew too at afoster@harvellandcollins.com.